And KRFY listeners, thanks for tuning in to the morning show today, August 13th. I'm Susie Prez, here with my co-host, Chris Bessler. Good morning, Chris.
Good morning, Susie. How are you on this beautiful day?
Yeah, it's gorgeous. Thanks. And I'm fine. Excited about our interview today. We have an informative interview lined up with Lake Pend'Oreille School District Superintendent Dr. Becky Meyer. And thanks for joining us today, Dr. Meyer.
Oh, thanks for having me.
Should we call you Becky or Dr. Meyer?
No, you can call me Becky.
Okay. The school district is gearing up for the 2025-26 academic school year, and we will be hearing all about what's on the agenda and other district news.
Yay.
Thank you, Dr. Meyer, or Becky, for updating happenings at Lake Pend'Oreille School District, keeping us informed. You come in quite often, not quite often, but on a regular basis, and we really appreciate that. So let's get to it. So just for a moment, can we highlight some of the accomplishments from last year? I know it was a big year.
Oh, it was a great year. Just to start out with, I think I'll give you a little data. It's always helpful for constituents and taxpayers in our community to know that their tax dollars are going to good use and that they are providing some metrics that show that we're making good use of their dollars and that the students are really at the center of everything we do. If you're interested in looking at any of this, I did do an annual report for the school board last night at our board meeting. And so I do have a superintendent report. It's going to be posted on our homepage today. So you would be able to access this. Also, I've talked at length on this program about our strategic plan. And we're starting into year three of that. And we did do an update as to what our progress has been on all the deliverables in our strategic plan. I think it would be a little bit too much to go through for the listeners this morning, but you can access that on LPOSD for Lake Pend'Oreille School District.org. So just giving you a couple of highlights, the school board's goals this year were to concentrate on one trusted adult. That means that we want students to be able to have one trusted adult at the school that they can talk to. Obviously, their parents, their grandparents, people they're connected to outside of school are also their trusted adults, but we're just focusing on do our students have somebody at school? That helps with school safety. It helps with the students' well-being, mental health. All of that has been proven to help if they have one trusted adult. So, of course, the board's goal is always 100% of students would identify. This year, at the end of the year, looking at every single school, we have 99.3% was our data at the end of the year. So it's not 100%, but boy,
that is pretty great.
Amazing. Yeah.
Yes. And you think about there are students that move in that haven't maybe been here as long and maybe move in.
Things are turning over. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So wonderful. Super proud of our teachers and our staff. We have bus drivers, custodians, admin assistants. We have teachers, parapros, the CSOs, which are our campus security officers. All of these people are identified as one trusted adult. I mean, there are a number of bus drivers that are the trusted adult. So, they pick their kids up in the morning and they get to talk to them, drop them off at school. They set their day off in the right way. So I just can't overemphasize how wonderful our staff is. I put out this initiative 2 years ago, and the board loved it. The staff loved it. Talked a little bit about how to build relationships with kids, really make these connections, and it's really paid off for our district. So I'm super proud of this.
And do the kids, you mentioned that it could be a bus driver or a custodian even that is the kid, is the trusted adult. How do the kids kind of identify these adults for themselves?
Yes, that is exactly how it works. Often in kindergarten, they pick their kindergarten teacher because, kindergartners like glom onto their kid. But they do as they become older. We do a survey in the beginning of the year, and then every student that has not identified a trusted adult, our staff is committed, and each school does it a different way. Sometimes they have pictures and they show the staff, hey, these students have not connected with an adult yet, work on building a relationship. So each school does it differently, but they are committed to working towards 100% target of us to have one trusted. So they work throughout the year. A few schools survey again mid-year, but most schools just survey in the fall and then at the end of the year. And that's how we find out who their trusted adult is.
You mentioned that you talked to the staff about this program and how to be open to how it works. What have you identified, or do you do any training, first of all, or is it mostly memos? And have you identified some of the key components that an adult can put forth that students can, you know, connect with?
Right. There is a program run Trusted Adult. We didn't go through the official training, but we do have counselors, of course, with every school. We have admin that learned on this. And then often I found people in education, in a helping profession, have this ability to connect. 2 years ago, our theme was connection. So we really worked on giving tidbits to staff. Hey, have you tried this? Have you done that? I did a training with the bus drivers, some training with facilities, the facilities and the custodians. I did, you know, training with a number of groups just on giving them ideas, having them discuss scenarios, showing if it's not a natural way to connect with younger kids, what kind of questions can you ask to open the door for that? Yeah.
Right. Mm-hmm. So and, that's great.
Yeah.
It makes me think about, you know, my own school days and who my trusted adults were. And of course, I didn't think about it in that fashion. Right. But my school bus driver, Mrs. C, mm-hmm. Yeah, I would say she was one of my trusted mm-hmm. adults, even though I got in trouble a couple times.
That's okay.
School bus. I had to ride the school bus about 25 minutes each way. Mm-hmm. And it was its own little environment, of course, on a school bus on a rural route like that. And it just makes me wonder, and this is probably a number you don't have, but how does it break out between teachers and non-teaching staff percentages?
Yeah.
Because she would have been one I would have said, yeah, right. That's a trusted adult. Yeah.
I'd say the majority are classroom teachers just because students do spend a lot of time in the classroom and also asking teachers questions. You know, in elementary, you're there in that almost the full day. But the campus security officers have really had some great stories of connecting with kids. In my world, this is great for students, and it even goes to a deeper level. For me, school safety depends on this. I feel like that gives every student an avenue to talk about if something's concerning them personally. If they have seen something on social media, if they're concerned about a friend, not only just mental well-being for their friends, but it could be, an act of violence that they're concerned about. All of that really comes back to them being able to talk to a trusted adult. The research shows across the United States, when you tell a friend, when they tell their friend, it isn't as fruitful as telling an adult who will then take action. Because sometimes friends try to protect them, their own friends, and there have been acts of violence in school shootings across the country where students knew, and mm-hmm. they knew that this was going to happen. They didn't tell anybody. So building
they didn't
this
really know who to tell.
Yep. Yeah, and building this culture and climate where students know it's okay. It is, we've seen it play out that it's been helpful for our schools to remain safe.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. It's a good program. I'm glad it's here.
Yeah. Thank you. The second goal that the school board had is always graduation rate. That is really a measure of how well a school district is doing. And I tell the staff, from pre-K, pre-kindergarten, all the way through every single grade level until they get to be seniors, this is not just attributed to Clark Fork High School, Lake Ponderay High School, and Sandpoint High School. This is a K-12 systemic issue. We have to be able to continue to have students engaged, like to come to school, show up, have good attendance, families be happy with what we're doing with their students, not only the curriculum and the content, but the social engagement, you know, extracurriculars, co-curriculars we offer, making sure that we are meeting the needs of students K-12. That's when you get the graduation rate that shows that the families are happy with the school and our district, and they will stay and then graduate, which then puts them on the next step of success, whether that's out into the workforce, the military, a mission, four-year university, technical school, going right to work, any of those or whatever the student is going to make their heart sing and what's going to be best for them. But really getting to graduation, that has to be a measure of how our district's doing. So our goal, the board's goal, was 95% or more will graduate this last June. I can't give you the number yet because they have to go through all of the amendments, everyone who's graduated, they have to make sure and follow up and check on them. And then appeals, you have to put an appeal process, which happens this fall. So they don't release the exact amount until February. Hmm. Last February, though, we were 86.2. So our June of 2024, our graduation rate was 86.2. That is not high enough. We want it to be higher. The board said, yes, we're going to work on this. Just as I did say it on the radio here with you before, but I do want to give a big shout out to Clark Fork. That's a smaller school, so there's a smaller class, and they can really track those students. And Mr. Kemick has already done his appeals. That is 100% graduation rate. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So that will help.
That's perfect.
Yeah. That will help.
So how does 86.2 compare to other schools around the state?
It we're still beating the state average, but not by a lot. And this is definitely a goal that we want to concentrate on. Mm-hmm. We want to focus on keeping all of those students in school and showing them how this will be the foundation for them to jump off into whatever path they choose in the future. Mm-hmm. I do think that the CTEC, our Career Technical Education Center, will help increase this graduation rate, because if you're not headed to a four-year university, or you're not going to additional training, some students don't see the relevancy for like what they want to do when they graduate. And I think, you know, you probably saw in the paper, we had six students get their CDL last year. Geraldine Meyer thankfully set that up for them and helped them. We need to be able to help students see the relevancy of school, K through 12, and what that's going to contribute to them being prepared for post-secondary, whatever that may be. We need to support them.
When you said CDL?
Commercial driver's license.
Okay.
Yep.
So they are looking at six. A track that
yes.
direction.
Yeah, they could drive a truck or something
yes.
like that.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, great articles in the Daily Bee. So wonderful.
High school students.
Yes, yeah. Six of them. One female and five males, but they did it. I was so proud of them. Yeah. So, yes, wonderful.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of demand for that yes. right now, too.
Very so much so.
Good job prospects.
And yeah. we have great programs with CTEC, and it's going to help, I think, with this graduation rate. They did break ground, just a little insert into this goal. If you, we did a report out to the board last night, and Matt Deal, our facilities director, has an aerial view. Oh, goodness. You should drive by there if you haven't been by and around.
I haven't been by, no.
Yeah, and look at behind the south side of the Sandpoint High School, Sandpoint Middle School, Homeschool Academy campus. It's going to be over on that side, the south side, over by where the Forest Service built, you know, over that way, mm-hmm. by Dover, to go on that Highway 2 to Dover. Look over there and just drive by, and you'll see it's making progress. It is the ETA, estimated time of arrival for it to be done, is June of next year, so that students will be able to get into it and we'll be able to move all those students in there. And then Sandpoint Middle School's campus will start. So lots of fun projects doing. But let me go ahead and tell you the next, the third goal, and the board always keeps three goals so that it's, you know, manageable. There's focus on three distinct things. You can see I said one trusted adult, graduation rate, and then, of course, student achievement. They looked at two things. They looked at reading and they wanted to look at math. So there's really four goals because it's reading and math, but it's under student achievement. When we look at the IRI, you probably saw in Idaho Ed News, we this year were the fourth from all the bigger, not small, teeny rural schools, our districts. We were the fourth in the state. Ours was 79.5%. That is on what's called the IRI. That means Idaho Reading Indicator. And that's where students need to be at grade level or above. And our district, our goal was 80%. We had 79.5. That to me, in my world, that rounds up. So we made that goal. The board was in support of that, looking at it that way. And I do want to give a really shout out. I did last night as well. The kindergarten class, We were second in the state. We had 92% of our kindergartners reading at grade level and above by the end of the year. Mm-hmm. You both have seen kindergartners. It is difficult for them to even sit still, mm-hmm. let alone start to focus on letters, names, recognition, and words, and reading, and fluency, and comprehension.
How important is it for that early place to get to that goal?
Yeah.
Why is that a goal?
Well, you know, you've seen it over the years. It's a very common statistic. By third grade, students that can read at grade level, that's how they dictate how much prison space that they build. So you have to be able to, they have done a lot of research. We want all students to be able to read at grade level by grade three. It helps them because when you turn to fourth grade, instead of learning to read, you read to learn. Okay. And it shifts there. Some students, it's earlier. Some, it's a little later. With the dyslexic legislation that we've had, you know, shout out to all of our literacy leads and our champion for that, Lisa McElroy, who's the literacy lead, and we have literacy coaches at every school. And something our district has just, I mean, we have knocked it out of the park, mm-hmm. knocked it out of the park for this.
I just see the joy that young people get when they can read their own book.
Yes.
And it instills in them a love of learning in a different sort of way. Mm-hmm. I think.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And of course, that starts before they even get into school. If mm-hmm. parents would read books to their kids, that starts to create
yep.
that love of reading from the time they're infants.
Actually. And the understanding of language. You mm-hmm. hear the words from mm-hmm. a human.
Yep. It's amazing. Also, I do want to give a shout out to the Rotary for CHAFE. Mm-hmm. You know, the CHAFE bike ride that's so wonderful. And they funded the Book Trust, which is the love of reading and being able, kids be able to pick their own books and go at home and be able to own the books and have them at home with their families. That has been wonderful, that grant from the Rotary of Sandpoint for the last 3 years. And then this year they shifted and we did a grant proposal and they're funding really looking at literacy in our district and helping to fund continuing to grow in literacy and this love of reading, as well as intervention for students who don't quite have it yet.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that's perfect.
Yeah.
And the Panhandle Alliance for Education has been very supportive of the reading program.
And the Reading Buddies. Yeah. Yeah. I always thank PAFE because there's so much that comes, but the little reading bunnies that happen in first grade and they get to read to them. And they're, you know, ready for kindergarten yep. and just a number of teacher grants that they also give to help with this mm-hmm. Has been amazing. All right. So real quick,
and then math.
Yeah. Just to let you know about math. Mm-hmm. We said that we were going to have a 3% or more gain in our math ISATs. ISAT is the Idaho Student Achievement Testing. And we had a 2.5% gain. So again, I round that up to 3 and say that we met that goal, but we really want to focus. The board has a focus this year on really how do we help increase math scores across the state and nation. Math scores have been down since the COVID. And so our district really wants to concentrate. We had a new math curriculum, K-5, that we had last year. So really looking at what parts are working, where do we need to supplement, introducing a math rope. We have a reading rope. We're introducing a math rope and a lot of professional capacity building for staff to be able to help support staff, to help students who need further intervention for math, to help boost those this year.
And can we elaborate a little bit on what that measurement is? We had a 3% or 2.5% gain in testing results?
Yep. Yeah. And this is the ISAT. Most parents know about that because you get the results. They can access them. We send them electronically to them with this is how you interpret the scores. This is what your son or daughter's score means. And we've been doing these for, you know, years and years and years. It's a measure that the state uses that's required by the federal government to have a measure so that you can measure student achievement across all students. And then it's part of a bigger national consortium on smarter balanced assessment. So the ISAT really measures this part that I'm talking about with math. It is third through eighth grade. And then they do it once in high school, which is they switched from up to 11th grade last year.
Okay. So we hit the goals.
Yes.
Yeah. Congratulations.
Thank you. Can I just highlight one more academic success? We have two AP test results. If you're not familiar with AP, advanced placement, and they're very rigorous college-level courses that you can take in high school. The principal that started before me, Jim Soper, really got the ball rolling at Sandpoint High School before I was the principal, and then the staff was really excited about it, and we got the ball rolling and added several AP classes there. There's a great variety of AP classes for kids who really want to challenge themselves and like the rigor of those classes. Two that we've got back right now that I just want to brag about, we have AP Biology, which is super, super difficult. If not the hardest, it's considered one of the top two hardest AP tests. Our group, our mean score was 3.4 globally. In Idaho, it was 3.37. Globally, it was 3.24. The number of students who had three or higher on the test, 80%. Globally, only 70%. We beat state and global in biology. Mm-hmm. Thank you. A big shout out to Mr. Barton. Jim Barton teaches that and has for years. Just an amazing job helping prepare those students. Kudos to the students for that. And then AP statistics. Wendy Old teaches this. She started it when I was there. She just does an amazing job as well. Really puts a lot. Kids love her because she puts so much time into helping them with it on her own time. Just kudos to all the students for this. That mean score was 3.75 globally, 2.92. So they beat, and the state was 3.3. Percentage of students, three or higher, 87.5, and globally it was only 60%. So our students at Sandpoint High School and in this district just have so much available for being a small North Idaho town. I just continues to astonish me at the opportunities for kids in this community.
They're challenged by taking AP courses, but there's also other benefits to having that in their pocket. They're doing college work.
Yep.
And it's free.
Yep.
And so when they go to college after graduation, they are ahead of themselves and they are not having to pay as much money.
Right. For college. And that's from the state's advanced opportunities. Earlier, when I told you about the six students that got their CDL, commercial driver's license, they were able to pay for that with advanced opportunities. Students that take these AP tests, they can pay for that with the advanced opportunities. That is Governor's Little Advanced Opportunities Program, and it does help all students that want to be able to apply that. It's wonderful.
So do those credits count at all state universities?
Yes. And if you have depending on where you go to school, if you have a three or higher, which is why they reported it that way, it depends what school. Like if you go to Stanford, sometimes they, in certain classes, you have to have a four or better. You know, if you go to University of Idaho, anything a three or better, you can waive that. So it saves you tuition. My youngest daughter had 2 years, almost 2.5 years of school already paid for by having these AP classes and dual credit classes at Sandpoint High School. Think of how much that helps you for students and families that are paying for higher education. You already have that paid for, and you got to be supported through it at Sandpoint High School.
How many AP classes are offered at our school district?
Well, I would have to check, since I'm not the principal there anymore, I would have to ask Jackie Crossingham, our principal, how many. But there is quite a few. There's a lot of options.
That's what I've heard. It's pretty comprehensive.
Yes, very much so.
Well, okay. Good news, all good news.
Yes, really great.
Congratulations. Wow, we have a great school district. And it really speaks to the families and the parents and then the staff and the administration for really holding these pictures and these goals so strongly.
Yeah.
So good job.
It does bring up a point for me. I know the listeners might be wondering about House Bill 93. That was that bill that, with the tax credit for families that wanted to pick a different route, different alternate.
Vouchers, basically.
Yeah. Options for, and you can have a $5,000 tax credit. If you have a student with disability, you could have up to a $7,000 on a tax credit. And the legislator passed it. this last session, and they retroactive it back to January 1st. So for this 2025 taxes, I do support families to be able to have choice. I've said it on this before. I've said it on Barbara Croppinger's program also. I believe that families know what's best for their students. I just know that for the majority of families that really want a well-rounded education with a lot of rigor and a lot of options, you know, our school district, Lake Pontchartrain School District, is a great choice. I also welcome families who want to do dual enrollment. There are, you know, I was at she was the director of the Waldorf for years, and it is an amazing program. I have so much respect for it. And students maybe blossom there, and then they may want to transfer to one of our schools at some point. There's plenty, Valor and Christian schools and Cardin and Selkirk, and lots of different options for families in our community. It's wonderful for families in this community because they do have options. Forestburg Charter School is a public school as well. That's not, so they're in with public schools like we are. But I just really think, obviously my job is to brag about our school district, but if I step back and just take a factual look at it and try to be non-biased, if you look at what happens when students come to our school district, I mean, 92% of kindergartners being proficient by the end of the year, is second in the state only behind one charter school. It's amazing. All the opportunities we just talked about with CTE and looking at kids, Read to Ski program is going to be happening with Numerica sponsoring a Read to Ski program at Sandpoint Middle School and Clark Fork Junior High this year for middle school students to be able to read and then earn ski passes. You know, Numerica is being built, the credit union right in front of Yokes.
Yeah.
So they're sponsoring that.
Is this a new program? I haven't heard of this before.
It just started. We're just rolling it out. It'll be in the loop that's coming out on August 15th. Our Welcome Back loop is coming out. And thank you to Tom Chassie up at Schweitzer for helping this to happen as well. Our middle level students really, really love the opportunity to be able to get up on the mountain.
Do they get to ski during the school day?
I haven't asked Mr. Penrose, so I'm not sure. Sandpoint Middle School, I'm not sure how they have that set up, but it might be. They used to have that program
occasionally.
Right. So,
well, when to grow up in Sandpoint and have that ski resort there, every kid ought to be able to have a chance to experience it and just see if that's something that they really want to take off with. I will say that if you've just tuned in, this is KRFY, the morning show, with our hosts, our Susie Prez, myself, Chris Bessler, and we're talking today with Lake Pontchartrain School District Superintendent Dr. Becky Meyer. And Dr. Meyer, so, carry on. You had a report just last night to the board, and we're pulling some of the highlights out of that. Is there anything else that you want to bring forward?
I just want to go back to the House Bill 93. Even though I do respect and honor parents' choices, I do think our district is a wonderful choice for families. And I think it bears out not only for the students, talking about that one trusted adult and the relationships, the opportunities they have, but also in the actual student achievement metrics, you can see how successful we are. The other thing I want to say, we did have some concerns from patrons about House Bill 93. Because there is $50 million that the legislators set aside for this. It's a first come, first serve. It's supposed to help economically disadvantaged families first. I am not sure exactly. The State Tax Commission is in charge of that. It isn't something the school district runs. It's nothing that the Idaho Department of Education runs. It goes through the State Tax Commission, and that's how families. So we don't have any, we're not checking on that. That's not up to us. That's between the State Tax Commission and the families who turn that in on their taxes. So in my opinion, if that is what the legislator wants to do to be able to help support choice for families, as long as, and I said this on this report before, the only problem that I have is that everyone should be measured on the same measuring stick. So if we have to have a school report card, which you can go on and see all of our schools and our entire district on the Idaho Department website, you can look and see the report card for every school district, 115, and then all the charter schools have it required by law. We have to, all this information, staff retention, all of who's endorsed in what, all of the constraints and red tape and all of our student achievement, attendance, graduation rate, ELL, which is English Language Learners. So all of that's reported. I think that it's great if we are able to offer families choice as long as every other choice has a report card and reports on the same measures so that we really are talking apples to apples and families have the facts there to be able to look at. So that's mm-hmm. my only mm-hmm. caveat here.
Well, is that part of the legislation?
No.
Is it proposed? Are you got no. legislators going to carry it forward?
We have several groups in the state that are making that. There's obviously if you've kept up with the news, the Reclaim Idaho and them looking at that group, looking at making sure that these measures are put into place before this program would blossom without accountability.
That's the word I was looking for, mm-hmm. accountability and qualifications to educate. Yeah. And I guess the only way you find out is through the matrix and the things that show up at the end.
Yeah.
But there's got to be some level of qualifications and accountability.
Yeah.
I agree.
It's early, I know, but can you tell how this legislation may have affected enrollment?
I can't, but Chris, this community supports public schools tremendously. They really do. And if we weren't doing such a fantastic job, I would be concerned that people would be taking their kids and going to have other routes. I'm not saying 100% of every single student that lives in Bonner County, is going to go to our schools, but for the majority, they really connect and find what they need and feel like we're successful and effective for their kids. There are families that have a different choice, and I respect that. When I was the Sandpoint High School principal, I had a lot of families that would have other choices when the kids were younger. Maybe they needed smaller class sizes or, different things that would be better for them. The Waldorf, I watched them teach reading and math with music. It worked for some kids. It was phenomenal. Mm-hmm. And then some of those students would then transfer when they got to secondary and they needed to go into a different system and have some more specifics with chemistry or physics or different math and different things they were interested in, theater and CTE classes and welding and computers and stuff.
So. Does the $50 million that's been designated to House Bill 93 affect the funding for the public school system, our public school system, in any way, shape, or form?
That is hard for me to answer. There are two schools of thought. Some folks said this is $50 million that the governor has set aside for this. It did not affect the public school budget, which is the biggest line item in the state's budget. But I just want to say a couple of caveats. And again, I am not trying to be pro or con. That is not my job. My job is to tell you how it works in Lake Pend Oreille School District and really how great we're doing, and folks can put their kids in and see for themselves. They can go and look on our website and look on the state's website at the report card. But we did have, for the first time in like 15, don't quote me on the years because I think it's been about 15, but I could be wrong. It might be longer, but we have had a zero, our budget for our operational budget, 0% increase from the state. Zero. There's been a cost of living. There's inflation. We have zero increase. That is difficult when you're trying to keep up, facilities and maintenance and everything that you do to run a school district. Running any business with a 0% increase in funding, that's like taking a business and saying we're not going to, increase the revenue. So that came just from the last legislative session. And now the governor publicly said, we have to submit budgets that are 2, 4, and 6% holdback. Hmm. So that would be very disappointing to myself, our school district, and every superintendent in the entire state would be highly disappointed if this $50 million went to this other program and yet we were made to hold back 2, 4, and 6% after we had 0% for operational funding. If we have a 2, 4, or 6%, it'd be great if that $50 million and other distributions were held back as much. And some folks say, hey, it's a separate stream. That's a separate stream. It's not going to affect public school budget. Other folks say that that will eventually, historically, you can look at other districts, Arizona,
other states, yeah, mm-hmm.
Ohio, thank you, other states, Ohio. There's districts that you know, they've gone from 45 million up to 500 million. Like, there's a big jump when people start using it and they like it. So that's just to be seen in our state. But there are several citizen groups, I think, that are working against this being expanded past the 50 million because they don't want to see that hurt the public education mm-hmm. funding stream.
It seems like Idaho's revenue is going up. I'm not sure why this decrease has been mandated, so to speak. And you mentioned operations and things like that always costs a living going up, but also great teacher retention.
Yeah.
You know, you have to have competitive salaries, right. And Idaho probably isn't at the top right now.
Well, no, we're not. In funding for mm-hmm. students, you know, we're 50 out of 51st on the amount per student. And Governor Little has said publicly, well, we do great. We get the most bang for our buck in this state by the amount that we invest in kids and what our test scores are. There's a very good ratio. I'd say even more so here. We do thank the local supporters in our community because we do have the indefinite term levy. So we are past this, you know, the regular amount that they give per student. We have additional because this community supports the Lake Pend'Oreille School District. Mm. We also have, you know, the tremendous grants that we get from PAIF, huge strategic initiatives that they fund every year, and teacher grants. So, again, a shout out to PAIF for that, all the local community. But I do want to give the legislators some credit. They did put money into the career ladder, and they did increase the classified staff a little bit. The reason it doesn't affect us is because all of our salaries, to be competitive up here, and not lose folks and have people be able to come to North Idaho, we do have competitive wages and benefits here. We're one of the best in the state. I think we're third from the top as far as, you know, the mean. And it is important that we continue that trend. But so the raise that the legislature gave to staff, we already are above that amount, so it helps us to be, you know, refill the pots, but it isn't take care of at all. So,
well, yeah. Speaking of employee retention, how is that going right now?
89.5.
Okay,
we're one of the top. Very little turnover.
Yeah,
we're one of the top in the state.
And is it difficult? And that other 11% or 10.5%, is it difficult to get new teachers?
No. No,
it's a desirable place to live, but we also have high cost of living.
Yeah, there is that. Hopefully they look at the new thing that came out with LEAP and Kinnick-Sue Land Trust on those townhouses over in Priest River. What a great story. Mm-hmm. If you didn't read that in the Daily Bee or look online at the Envision newsletter they give out. Mm-hmm. Wow, what a great opportunity. And we did just send that out. Katie sent that to me. I sent it out to all of our staff in case anyone's interested in a first-time home.
Yeah, that's, and that's an affordable home program that Kinnick-Sue Land Trust with this organization called LEAP.
Yep.
Has initiated. And they're actually building homes in Priest River.
It's going to be like $270,000 for this home, which is
nice homes.
Yes.
Yeah, they're nice. Yeah.
Yes.
Affordable mortgage housing, and things like that.
Yes.
And having things like that program highlighted will increase being creative and coming up with new ideas for our community.
100%.
Mm-hmm. Well, we're going to run out of time before too long. What else do you want to touch on, Dr. Meyer?
If anybody wants an update on the facilities, I sort of inserted it a little bit earlier, but we also, I just want the public to know, we've started CTEC. That's the Career Technical Education Center of North Idaho. That they've broke ground. Mm-hmm. And they've pulled out those portables, and they've broke. If you go just drive by there and look at that south side of that campus, that will be done in June of next year. And then we will be moving programs into there and eventually expanding it, but starting out with residential carpentry, computer science and A+, looking at that, computer classes that Mr. Gray teaches. Scotty Fitchett is going to be teaching a residential carpentry program. Kristen Day is teaching our diversified health occupations. We have a new teacher, Mrs. Smith, that's Leah, that is going to be teaching. She's an athletic trainer, and she's going to be teaching sports medicine in there. Mm-hmm. So lots of opportunity. The Kiwanis, the local Kiwanis Club, they have donated, promised to donate the four posts for an automotive program. So that will be coming in the future as well. And then we continue to have the graphic design, architecture, draftsman, welding, graphic arts, Cedar Post, computer business, applications. We continue to have all of that. And then we're expanding from there. We're looking at a hospitality/culinary arts program that might be coming in the next couple years at a commercial type program to be ready for the industry. So that's something on the horizon.
So we'll
to
get
look
the
for.
Kids to cook for us.
Yes.
And we'll have some that community dinners or something.
That would be wonderful.
That would be wonderful. So, and then next up after that, I think you made mention of it. The facilities upgrades are going to turn to the middle school.
Yep.
And then so what's planned there?
The middle school is still in the design. We're getting close to the design. The design phase coming to an end. We've got We had two parent input meetings. We had staff input meeting, administration, and now put all together. The architect put it together and did a couple of concepts. Just released them to the school board. They came early and looked at those and gave feedback last night. And that then will go to the next stage that we will be taking it to the staff at Sandpoint Middle School to give feedback on the two initial design concepts. And then probably, we haven't set the date, but I think it's going to be about the second or third week of September. We'll have a community input where these will be out for people to look at and give in comments so the architecture can get input from the community before he finalizes a design that will be adopted, and then they will start to begin the initial phases of ordering and getting initial things done, and they'll hit the ground running in the spring of 2026, and they will then be building, and we'll be able to move in there a year after that. So that's going to be 480 work days of on that. So
yeah, big project.
Big project.
So here's a kind of a facilities adjacent question. So the city, you know, has this neat new James E. Russell Sports Center. Yes. And I'm just curious, and they're trying to figure out how to actually use it and how to finance operations there. I'm just curious, has there been any dialogue from the city about having school programs in that facility?
Yeah, I think the tennis team, we pay them some money for our tennis teams to be able to use that for practice and meets and such. So we already have that connection set up. And then I'm sure there are field trips and different classrooms that are going to do that as well. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay.
I had a question. Last year and the year before, you had a special program. And all I can remember, I don't remember the name, but it was Safety and Media. Is the way I look at
it. Oh, yeah, the Student Safety Summit.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the Student Safety Summit. Do you feel that last two were successful, and are you moving forward with that program?
Yeah, remember the first year, there was over 300 people there, and we talked about some of the things that parents maybe didn't know on the dark web or hidden apps that parents didn't know about. We had the social media piece, and then we also had the fentanyl piece and talking about that piece. So we had that was very highly attended. This year, we did the Anxious Generation, and remember we did that and went and talked at Sandpoint High School. I don't think I did enough. I came and talked on the program, but I don't think I explained enough to parents that it was for parents of all ages. So primarily secondary parents came to that at Sandpoint High School. So myself and the two presenters, Connor Bransky is a teacher at Sandpoint High School, and Becca Palmer was a teacher at Clark Fork High School. She's now at Sandpoint High School, but they did presentation and they presented it at Sandpoint High School. I had them come to Farmers Tidwell, and we had several elementary folks come there. And then I went and did the program at Hope Elementary, Southside, and Sagal Elementary. So all elementary parents were able to come as well. It was really well received, and really looking at anxiety, loneliness, depression, some of the indicators of teenagers being addicted to their cell phones and social media, electronic devices. We have a new board policy about limiting the access. You know, Sandpoint High School and Clark Fork, they have limited. They can only use them in between passing periods and at lunch. It's just been really successful to be able to create more connection with students. And the staff and parents are really pleased. My feedback has been that they've been really pleased about that.
Are you going to move forward and do that again in a different maybe way with a new subject?
Yeah. But we actually, I don't want to end on a negative note, but we did have, there's some sad things that happen with high school kids, and we did have a death by suicide this last spring at Sandpoint High School. So we had great response. Mental health professionals from the community came and volunteered. Youth pastors from local churches came and helped us. Forestburg Charter School came and helped us. All of our counselors, we have a crisis response team, came and helped us. There is never a positive to this, but the only thing I can say is, what can we do to learn from this? And we are going to always want to make things better and more connected and figuring out a way for students, again, like I talked about earlier, connecting with staff and groups in our community and our schools. We are going to have our entire focus this year for the Student Safety Summit is all going to be about healthy student connections. What questions, if parents have questions, what can they ask their students? How can they be more involved in their child's life to make sure if something's going on, how do they find help for them? So our entire focus this year for our Student Safety Summit is all going to be about life awareness and really being aware and learning more. There's the QPR training, question, persuade, and refer. It's a famous training, came out of Spokane. We did it with every single staff person. We're working on getting that done.
Shining a light on safety and the safety nets that
And mental health.
And mental health for students, yes. Mm-hmm. And I do believe social media and too much connection to social media and their cell phones is a detriment to that. We live in the most beautiful place in the entire world. And I really, every single month in the loop, I always add something like, get your family outdoors, go make some adventures. You can hike, you can fish, you can walk, there's play. It's just so much to do in this community, indoors and outdoors, the ski hill. I just really encourage families to get out and enjoy your family and create adventures together.
Nice. Well, in the last few minutes we have here. So first day of school is September 2nd. Anything you want to tell parents about getting ready here? That's just less than 3 weeks off.
Well, I just want to tell them thank you so much for letting your kids play all summer. I hope you had time to reconnect with them. I hope there was a lot of time to just enjoy the beauty and each other, playing card games, really engaging. Hopefully they read and practiced a little bit of their. But if not, we're going to hit the ground running. But I just want everyone to know we have the best staff in the world, and our staff really cares about each and every student. Every student every day really does have meaning in our district. And so hopefully your kids are excited to come back, and we will see you soon.